Brothers in the Bible often show anger and even hatred of each other. But we need to consider what happened afterwards as well. We'll start by reading Genesis 4, 1 through 15. The familiar. And the man knew Eve, his wife, and she conceived and bare Cain, and said, I have gotten a man with Jehovah. She bare his brother Abel, and Abel was the keeper. And in process of time, it came to pass that Cain brought of the fruit of the ground an offering unto Jehovah. And Abel, he also brought of the firstlings of his flock and the fat thereof. And Jehovah had respect unto Abel and his offering, but unto Cain and to his offering he had not respect. And Cain was very wroth, and his countenance fell. And Jehovah said unto Cain, Why art thou wroth, and why is thy countenance fallen? If thou doest well, shall it not be lifted up? And if thou doest not well, sin coucheth at the door, and unto thee shall be its desire, but do thou rule over it. And Cain told Abel, his brother, and it came to pass, when they were in the field, that Cain rose up against Abel his brother and slew him. And Jehovah said unto Cain, Where is Abel thy brother? And he said, I know not. Am I my brother's keeper? Like, am I my brother's jailer? And he said, What hast thou done? The voice of thy brother's blood crieth unto me from the ground. And now cursed art thou from the ground, which hath opened its mouth to receive thy brother's blood from thy hand. When thou tillest the ground, it shall not henceforth yield unto thee its strength. A fugitive and a wanderer shalt be in the earth. And Cain said unto Jehovah, My punishment is greater than I can bear. Behold, thou hast driven me out this day from the face of the ground. And from thy face shall I be hid, and I shall be a fugitive and a wanderer in the earth, and it will come to pass that whosoever findeth me will slay me. And Jehovah said unto him, Therefore, whosoever slayeth Cain, vengeance shall be taken on him sevenfold. And Jehovah appointed a sign for Cain, lest any finding him should smite him. Now, this brings a number of questions to mind. How does Abel's blood cry unto Jehovah from the ground? And then there's Hebrews 12:24, speaks of the blood of sprinkling, speaketh better than that of Abel. Is it saying here that the blood of Abel is typical of the blood of Christ? Now, why was Cain to be a fugitive and a wanderer in the earth? Cain expresses no remorse. So why would Jehovah take vengeance on his enemies sevenfold? And what is the appointed sign for Cain? Well, let's read the remaining verses of this chapter here. 16 through 26. And Cain went away from the face of Jehovah and dwelt in the land of Nod. Now the word Nod means wandering. That's appropriate. On the east of Eden, or in front of Eden. And Cain knew his wife, and she conceived and bare Enoch. And he builded a city and called the name of the city after the name of his son Enoch. And unto Enoch was born Irad, and Irad begot Mehujael, and Mehujael begot Methusael, and Methusael begot Lamech. And Lamech took unto him two wives. The name of the one was Ada, and the name of the other Zillah. And Ada bare Jabal. He was the father of such as dwell in tents and have cattle. And his brother's name was Jubal. He was the father of all such as handle the harp and the pipe. And Zillah, she also bare Tubal-Cain, the forger of every cutting instrument of copper and iron. And the sister of Tubal-Cain was Naamah. And Lamech said unto his two wives, Ada and Zillah, hear my voice. Ye wives of Lamech, hearken unto my speech. For I have slain a man to my wounding, and a young man to my hurt. If Cain shall be avenged sevenfold, truly Lamech 70 and sevenfold. And Adam knew his wife again, and she bare a son, and called his name Seth. For she said, God hath appointed me another seed instead of Abel, for Cain slew him. And to Seth, to him also there was born a son, and he called his name Enosh. Then began men to call upon the name of Jehovah. Now, when it says that God hath appointed me another seed, the Hebrew word for appointed is shath. So Seth means appointed. Well, this raises a number of additional questions. Why are there three unnotable generations of Cain even mentioned, seeing they were going to be wiped out by the flood anyway? What further interest would we have in them? Where is there any record of Lamech slaying anyone? Look for it. You can't find it. He only says he did. And then reconciles. Why is it in the days of Sheth's son do men begin to call upon the name of Jehovah? I do go on. It starts in Hebrews 12:24. Where it speaks of the blood of sprinkling, it speaketh better. So Abel then is typical. Let's see, I think we want to go back there. Earlier slide, first slide. Okay, blood of Abel is typical of the blood of Christ. But who is it that was of Christ? Who is it that came before Jesus and yet was jealous of Christ? And I think we would see this in the leadership, the high priest and the Pharisees, for that matter. Now, we consider that Jesus was able to offer a truly acceptable sacrifice, a blood sacrifice. Now, the best that fleshly Israel had been able to offer from the works of the law was not the blood sacrifice of one who could die for Adam. And so, fleshly Israel's leadership was jealous of Christ and slew him. Now, why would Cain be a fugitive and a wanderer in the earth, except to picture that Israel, after the slaying of Christ, 40 years later, the Jewish polity was destroyed, they were dispersed, and became fugitives and wanderers in the earth. Now, Cain expresses no remorse for what he has done. So why would Jehovah take vengeance on his enemies sevenfold, seven times? Well, now, the Jehovah God did not simply destroy Israel utterly, but he would take vengeance on his enemy seven times. Consider what happened at the time of the Spanish Inquisition. Spain at the time was the greatest power, the greatest naval power in the world. But with the persecution of the Jews, forcing them to either be converted to their form of Christianity or to be slain, or put out in boats and shoved out into the ocean to starve to death there. And within a century, Spain was a second-rate power. Then there was Adolf Hitler, who established the Third Reich that would last for 1,000 years, persecuted the Jews, and he only missed it by 988 years. So, whoever has taken their wrath out on the Jews has paid for it dearly. What's the appointed sign for Cain? The Jews have remained separate and distinct for the entire gospel age, in spite of being dispersed among the Gentiles. There were some in the 1920s dispersed among the German tribe and assimilated. And we see Adolf Hitler came to power and that didn't work. But it was good for Israel in its restoration. So why do we have some unnotable generations of Cain? Well, let's stop and think. Once fleshly Israel was dispersed, there were generations and generations of Israel that were not notable. They were not a people. They were not a country, even though they had that sign that they were kept separate and distinct from the nations among whom they were distributed. But we come now to the problem of, is there any record of Lamech slaying anybody? He says he did. Well, there is a time when, yes, you can say he had slain someone. Remember the argument that when Levi was yet in the loins of Abraham, that he paid tithes to Melchizedek. So I think what we're seeing here is Lamech is saying, when I was in the loins of Cain, I slew a man. I slew a man to my wounding and a young man to my hurt. I am the first one to recognize that the slaying of Abel was what brought all this misery down upon us. The time will come in the kingdom when Israel will mourn for Christ as for an only son. So why do Lamech's sons prosper? Because in the kingdom, when they recognize the slaying of Christ was utterly to their detriment and brought the wandering upon them, the diaspora, then they will repent and Lamech's sons will prosper. That is, the sons of Israel, fleshly Israel in the kingdom, will indeed prosper. We even see little glimpses of it already in present Israel with the Jews returning. So then we have another thing. What is Seth, who is appointed? That's the meaning of the name, appointed. He was appointed as a substitute for Abel, for Cain slew him. When Christ was slain, did he stay dead? For maybe a day and a half, but then he was raised from the dead. So we need someone to picture our resurrected Lord, and Seth is appointed to do that. But then in the days of Seth's son, in the days of the children of the resurrection, will men begin to call upon the name of Jehovah. So here, Cain and Abel were at odds at the beginning, but one of the descendants of Cain, Lamech in this case, recognizes that it was utterly to their hurt, he repents and is very much reconciled to the other side of the ancestry, the family tree. Now we have some other brothers that we can consider in less detail. Consider Ishmael and Isaac. They were brothers. You might say half-brothers because they had different mothers. In Genesis 21, 9 and 10, we read, Sarah saw the son of Hagar, the Egyptian, whom she had borne unto Abraham, mocking. I think this is when Isaac was 5 years old, but that's another topic. When she said unto Abraham, Cast out this handmaid and her son, for the son of this handmaid shall not be heir with my son, even with Isaac. So Ishmael was mocking Isaac, and as a result, it was so bad that he was put out with his mother. But does that end the matter? Fortunately, it does not. Let's look at Genesis 25, 7 to 10. Genesis 25, 7 to 10. And these are the days of the years of Abraham's life when he lived, 175 years. And Abraham gave up his breath and died in a good old age, an old man and full of years, and was gathered to his people, those that had been died before him of his ancestors. And Isaac and Ishmael, his sons, buried him in the cave of Machpelah, in the field of Ephraim, the son of Zohar the Hittite, which is before Mamre, the field which Abraham purchased of the children of Heth. There was Abraham buried, and Sarah his wife. So although Ishmael has ridiculed Isaac, and when Isaac was very young and was put out, did he remain totally at opposition to Isaac, the one that he had mocked? And the answer is, fortunately, no. They did get together when it was time to bury their father, Abraham. I think in that we have, again, something which is typical, and that it is typical of fleshly Israel. Ishmael was to be a wanderer in the earth also, as Bedouins, and they picture, therefore, fleshly Israel, and Isaac, the son of promise, would picture spiritual Israel. And we know that there's been hostility between Jews and spiritual Israel down through the gospel age. But they did get together again when it was time to bury Abraham. And so it will be that fleshly Israel and spiritual Israel will be reunited. They'll be on the same side together. Let's consider two other brothers, Jacob and Esau. We'll look at Genesis 25 and start with verse 20 to 26. And Isaac was 40 years old when he took Rebekah, the daughter of Bethuel, the Syrian of Padan Aram, the sister of Laban, the Syrian, to be his wife. And Isaac entreated Jehovah for his wife because she was barren, and Jehovah was entreated of him. And Rebekah, his wife, conceived, and the children struggled together within her, started early. And he said, If it be so, wherefore do I live? And she went to inquire of Jehovah. And Jehovah said unto her, Two nations are in thy womb, and two peoples shall be separated from thy bowels. And the one people shall be stronger than the other people, and the elder shall serve the younger. And when delivered were fulfilled, behold, there were twins in her womb. And the first came forth red all over, like a hairy garment, and they called his name Esau. And after that came forth his brother, and his hand had hold on Esau's heel, and his name was called Jacob. That is one that takes the heel or supplants. And Isaac was 60 years old when she bare them. So they were at odds right at the beginning. And when the time came for the Isaac to be buried, getting ready for it, Isaac was on his last legs. Esau then hated Jacob because he had taken his birthright from him and also taken the blessing of the firstborn from him. Fortunately, that's not the end of the matter. We go to chapter 32, and we read, we could read from verse 1 to chapter 33, verse 16, where Jacob has fled from Esau, and Rebekah has told him, go to my former house, and you take a wife from there. But the time came that he was not too comfortable there either, and both wives said, let's go back to your home. And when he did, he was afraid of what would happen when he heard that Esau was coming with 400 men. But Esau's anger had abated over those 20 years, and they got back together again. And here I think we have the picture where Esau pictures false spiritual Israel and Jacob the true spiritual Israel. The denominations or sectarian organizations may not reconcile the church, but the people of those organizations will reconcile with the bride of Christ in the kingdom. Then we have the case of Joseph and his brethren. First, Joseph's brethren hated him, and afterwards they are reconciled. It was one thing that Joseph was sent to find out what's going on with the handmaids. He comes back with an ill report of what they were doing, and the leader of them was Dan. So he was unpopular with all of the four sons of the handmaids. And then he has two dreams. And his father wove a robe for him, a fancy robe that's of noble people. And so they were jealous of him. The one vision was of the sun and the moon and the stars. That's the second vision. Bow down to Joseph. And now not only were the 11 brothers angry with him, but also their father and mother were unhappy that they should be bowing down to him. It was so bad that the brothers gathered together and decided to take Joseph and put him in a pit and slay him until... But were they all against him? The answer is no. Reuben tried to deliver him from death and failed. And Judah said, well, is it a benefit to us for him to die? Couldn't we get some money by selling him to the slave traders? And so for 20 shekels of silver, he was sold to the slave traders and sold into Egypt, and we know how in that time he had three stages of his life. Under Potiphar, and he grew in the household of Potiphar until Potiphar's wife lied about him, and he was thrown in prison. But that was not too bad, because it turns out it was the king's prison, where he could learn all about government in a place like no university could teach about government. So when the third phase came, he was made number two ruler in the entire nation of Egypt. And that pictures, of course, our Lord Jesus, first as the Logos, growing in authority as more and more beings were created. And then he was humiliated by being made a human being and then slain. But in his resurrection, he became number two man in the entire universe. And when the sons of Jacob came, and Jacob with them, they all bowed down to him. And I think, let's see, we could go back. Let's see. That this is fine. Yes. And so we see in the sons of Jacob, first Joseph, the one who rescues all his brethren. That's Christ. And with him, the bride. He was married to a daughter of the priesthood in Egypt. Benjamin pictures the great multitude. That's the full brother of Joseph. But then we have his other brethren, picture, I think, false spiritual Israel, but they will come into harmony with him in the kingdom. We can consider now Jephthah and his brethren. Jephthah was born perhaps first, but he was the son of a harlot. And then his half-brothers were born after him, and they rejected him. They threw him out. And that was, he fled to a place that was tens of miles away from his brethren, until they had a problem with a foreign enemy. And they knew that Jephthah was the strong man. And so they sent for him. And we needn't go through all the details of how he was sent. But they agreed that he would share in the inheritance if he would just come back and save them, which he did. And so ultimately, Jephthah was reconciled with his brothers. Now, compare Jesus and fleshly Israel. So we could go back one more. Not quite ready for this one yet. Okay. Compare Jesus and fleshly Israel. Jesus was cast out by fleshly Israel. But now, who is it that is bringing Jewry back to the land of Israel? And who will do it even from the grave in the kingdom? Now, fleshly rejected Jesus, even saying that because he was the son of a virgin, that he was really an illegitimate son. They could have learned from Jephthah, who was an illegitimate son, that an illegitimate son, as they viewed Jesus, rather than as the son of God, as well as the son of man. But again, Jesus and fleshly Israel will come into harmony in the kingdom when fleshly Israel mourns for Jesus as for an only son. Now we can go to the next slide. We'll go ahead and read Matthew 5, verses 21 and 2. You've heard it said, you've heard that it was said to them of old time, thou shalt not kill, and whosoever shall kill shall be in danger of the judgment. But I say unto you that everyone who is angry with his brother shall be in danger of the judgment. And whosoever shall say to his brother, Raca, shall be in danger of the council. Now, Raca really means, you fool or you stupid idiot. And whosoever shall say, thou fool, that's really not strong enough, shall be in danger of the Gehenna of fire. That last one that they translate as thou fool is really somebody who is willfully wicked. Not just stupid, but willfully wicked. And so just as brethren in the Old Testament wound up being reconciled to one another later, we need to apply this in our own lives. Have I ever been angry with my brother? Yes, I have. So consider, if I harbor anger against my brother, I'm in danger of being brought to the court. Do I want to be a defendant in court? Now, it gets a little stronger with calling my brother stupid. How could you do anything so stupid? Then I will be in danger of the council or the court of appeals. That's the next step up. The last step before the final court that has the power of life and death. If I call my brother, you willfully wicked, I judge his motives, I will be in danger of the Gehenna of fire. That is the second death. Is it worth the risk? So let's consider a little farther in the chapter, the next two verses, 23 and 4. If therefore thou art offering thy gift at the altar, and there rememberest that thy brother hath aught against thee, leave there thy gift before the altar, and go thy way, first be reconciled to thy brother, and then and come and offer thy gift. So if I recognize that I've done something to hurt my brother, I need to first go and be reconciled before anything I can offer to the Lord can be acceptable. I have had some difficulty with this. In one case, I knew that there was a problem between me and another brother. Every time I went to him, I would be interrupted in mid-sentence, and I never was able to be reconciled to him. I don't know what I should have done differently, but this has weighed heavily on me all this time because we were never reconciled before he died. So let us consider our offerings to the Lord. We want to offer our best on the altar. But let me be sure, to the extent that I am able, to first be reconciled with those with whom I am at odds and they are at odds with me. May the Lord guide in our endeavors to carry it out and be reconciled to our brothers, all of them.